treat mom to the best Mother's Day yet at Matalan. For a limited time only, we've got 20% off gifting, including women's nightwear and slippers. Shop the perfect gifts to spoil because she's simply the best. Head to your nearest store now or online at matalan.co.uk. T's and C's apply.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Peter Flaherty. What's going on, Peter?
Not much. I'm fired up to we got a handful of guys here who are risers or soon to be risers on the next draft update. We're full steam ahead in conference play. High school around the country is ramping up. It's a very fun time of year, and it's only going to get more entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. We're heading into week 6 of the college season. We are approaching publication for our first in-season update of the year. The BA Draft 300 list will be out on the site next week. So excited for that. Peter, I think the 300 update is always one of the trickiest because on top of just adding 100 more players, like typically we have a top 100 at some point in the summer or fall the preceding year, and then before the season we got a 200. That adding those extra 100 is easy because everything's been static for the last few months for the most part, and then just expanding to all the players we view as like top 10 round talents, and then also trying to account for all the changes, all the players we already had ranked on the board, it just creates for a very noisy board in terms of up down movement. So hopefully we can capture it as accurately as possible, but I know I'm probably pushing through too many energy drinks trying to get this update locked and loaded. So today's podcast might be a little bit quicker and shorter than our typical ones, just so I can get back to that so you guys have that update next week. But yeah, we are here to talk about some up arrow guys, some players we haven't mentioned. I had a piece on high school risers earlier this week, but there's no overlap on that piece and in this podcast. Peter, I had two high school players in North Carolina that I wanted to touch on because in the process of this 300 update, we've gotten lots of up arrow feedback on these guys. And I guess I'll start with Josh Hammond because he is the one who is at least currently ranked higher on our board, although maybe that won't be the case for some teams, depending on how you view the second player. But Josh Hammond is a fascinating profile because for me, he entered the year as one of the more exciting high school pitchers in the class. He goes to Wesleyan Christian Academy in High Point, North Carolina, Wake Forest commit, 6'1", 215 pounds, really strong, powerful kid with a fastball slider combination that was, I would say, one of the more electric in the class. He gets a lot of movement on the fastball. He's been into the mid 90s with that pitch. The slider has gotten plus evaluations. And I think even dating back to his underclass days, he was really regarded as one of the top arms in this class. I heard some buzz early before the season started that, like, hey, watch out for Josh as a hitter because he really wants to hit. He likes to hit and he's got legitimate tools as an offensive player. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. Like in the high school ranks, especially, we always have two-way players. And in my mind, I was like, I hope Josh figures out that he's a pitcher. I really am more towards the side of like, I want these guys on the side that they're best at. And what do you know? Josh Hammond early this year, phenomenal reviews on his stock as a hitter, pushing up the board, like as a hitter only. I think he's like a pretty legit two-way player right now. And he joins a group of two-way players in this class. It's pretty impressive, actually, now that I'm looking at it. It's Seth Hernandez is a right-handed pitcher and a legitimate hitter and shortstop. Billy Carlson, two-way player. Cruz Schoolcraft has power and can throw it really hard from the left side. There are a number of really exciting two-way players, but how about Josh Hammond, shortstop, instead of Josh Hammond, right-handed pitcher, Peter?
Yeah, admittedly, you know more about Hammond than I do, but just in digging in on him, especially recently with the feedback we've been getting and also what we've seen, it's interesting because these two-way kids are always so tough. I personally like him better with the bat now, and I could be a prisoner in the moment with the buzz, but even just in watching him, I like the look in the box. He's a strong physical kid. There's bat speed. There's feel for the barrel there. There's probably at least average-ish game power, and I've heard, and you have as well, of above average or plus raw, probably closer to plus raw than it is above average. So it's a pretty fun
He's a strong player. Kid.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, when you talk about him on the dirt, too, on the left side of the infield, he's got a plus arm. He's a good athlete. I mean, there's a lot to like from a tool standpoint, I'd say, as an offensive guy. And then it sounds like just watching him throw, he kind of looks more like this physical power arm on the mound than like a true pitcher, if that makes sense. Like, just get up there and throw smoke by kids.
Yeah, I think he even had some just reliever questions in general, just given his overall profile when people were mostly thinking about him as a pitcher moving forward as a pro prospect. There's a little bit of effort there. He can be scattered at times. I might be light on how people view his changeup, but I think most people thought of him as like solidly a fastball slider guy, and you hope the third pitch will come. So there were definitely some questions there, even though I think the pure upside and arm talent still stacks up with the best high school pitchers in the class. And then now just like watching his swing, it's such an explosive operation. He really unloads on the ball. Like sometimes he can get a little bit lungy on some of his swings that I saw early this spring, but as he gets more reps, and again, like this is a guy who's played a lot on both sides of the ball, like his performance as a hitter throughout the showcase circuit and throughout tournaments in 2024 was pretty impressive. I've heard like averages on both the hit and the power for people, and maybe you're a little more bullish on him moving forward in terms of getting to more juice, or you think he'll make some refinements offensively and get the hit tool even more exciting. But he feels like a pretty solid top 40-ish player right now, just viewing him as a hitter. I mean, I'll be curious to see where he plays defensively long term. Now he's a shortstop. I know there are some questions about whether or not he fits better at third base in the long run, just because he's a little bit thicker. But again, he's been running well. It sounds like I don't know if the run tool has jumped dramatically. He's not a true burner, but I've gotten good feedback on how he's running, how the stride has looked. So maybe he's got enough range for shortstop, and he definitely has the arm strength for the position. But either way, talking about a left side of the infield, solid hit, solid power, just adding to the shortstop capital of this high school class. Definitely a name to know, a name that's moving up. You'll see him higher on our draft board on the next update, but just a really fun profile in a class that has a lot of them.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think even though with the positional murkiness, so to speak, like the arm strength plays on the left side of the infield. And I think a great point that you made was, you know, you've already got this relatively exciting offensive profile. You mentioned the explosiveness in the box, this sort of budding hit power combination. I think the more and more you put stock into him with the bat and just let him hit and develop him as a hitter, you can kind of hope and project on each ticking up even further. So, I mean, it's just a real, I'd say, appealing profile.
Yeah, I believe he's just relieving for his high school team this spring. Ooh. That's something that JT Ginn did out of high school, and it was like really questionable at the time. All the scouts were like, why aren't you starting? Yeah. But like, I think he had a chance to like break the saves record or something for his Mississippi high school team. So that was the rationale. I don't know if he did that entirely through his senior spring or not, but he definitely was a reliever in high school. And like, I think with Josh, it's just like, hey, my preference is to hit. I want to focus more on hitting now. I'll just come and throw gas at the end of high school games as well. So that two-way experience with him is going to be interesting to see like where it goes. Another up arrow high school name is Briggs McKenzie, who is a left-handed pitcher out of Corinth Holders High in Wendell, North Carolina. He's an LSU commit. Definitely pitcher only for him. A long tradition of left-handed pitchers coming out of the high school ranks in North Carolina, and a shorter but still impressive tradition of left-handed pitchers named McKenzie coming out of North Carolina. I don't think Briggs is quite at McKenzie Gore's level, threatening to go in the top five picks in the class, but he is going to move significantly on our next draft update. He's pushing the first round. I don't know if he's a consensus first round type. I definitely think some teams probably do have him in the first round right now. But he's a 6'2", 185-pound lefty with a really projectable frame. He entered the spring with great ability to spin the breaking ball. I think last summer when I saw him at East Coast, I was probably significantly light on where I viewed his breaking ball because just the pure spin rates are super high. So he entered the spring as a pop-up candidate for some scouts who were really liking him, hoping he could add some more velocity, show more of the changeup, throw more strikes, continue to throw a breaking ball that a lot of scouts view as plus. And it sounds like he's done all of that. Like he's touched 94, 95. It's not like this huge velocity jump, but I've heard specifically that his changeup has looked like a better pitch than it was last summer. And the strikes have just been super consistent. He's had big, heavy scouting crowds come in to see him early this spring and just adds to the capital of left-handed pitching in this class that I think is really quite impressive. So, Peter, what are your thoughts on good old Briggs McKenzie?
In watching this kid pitch, and also in seeing recent video of him, I just fell more and more in love with what he is on the mound. He's left-handed, it's strikes, it's stuff, fastball low 90s up to 95 with some life through the zone, plus breaking ball, really impressive field of spin, and his ability to command the arsenal. So, kind of like Hammond offensively, there's a ton to like with Briggs on the mound, and it's like you just look at how many boxes he checks and what buckets he falls into, and it's a lot. Like if he was there right now with my second pick in the draft, I would jump on him so fast and be doing backflips that he was there because I mean he's outstanding, and it sounds like he's only gonna keep trending up as the spring progresses on and the draft gets closer, which isn't really surprising, but again, it's up to 94, 95 from the left side, plus breaking ball, feel for a changeup, it strikes, it's aesthetically, like how it looks is very pretty too, I think. It's a smooth delivery, there's arm speed there. It's just, man, he's awesome. And you were on him when we did I think our best tools draft. I don't know if he was your pick in the end, but you gave a quick little shout out to Briggs McKenzie. So I give you credit there, but
Do you remember what tool was it? Breaking ball for him?
Breaking ball. Definitely okay. Breaking ball. But
must have been woken up to his breaking ball at some point after I saw him at East Coast. Cause I definitely remember feeling like a little light on the breaking ball the first time I saw him in person. I don't know if I was just like being too much of a stickler for the velocity of the pitch. Cause I even still think it's a mid to upper 70s breaking ball. Some people call it a slider. I think it mostly is a curveball. But either way, like just the depth and the bite of that pitch, and I would assume it can only improve as it gets harder. But even without the velocity, we're getting plus review, like plus now grades on that breaking ball. And just looking back through the recent track record of North Carolina high school left-handed pitchers. In 2017, McKenzie Gore was the third overall pick by the Padres. He signed for $6.7 million, a pretty big gap between him and the next few guys here. But 2019, we had Blake Walston, 26th overall, out of New Hanover High with the D-backs. He signed for $2.5 million. I've already heard Blake Walston's name just kind of in passing with Briggs McKenzie in terms of like where he could go or where he fits on talent, like more similar to Blake Walston than McKenzie Gore. DJ Hers that year was a $500,000 pick by the Cubs in the eighth round, high school lefty out of Fayetteville. In 2020, you had Liam Norris at a Green Hope High who got $800,000 in the third round, also a D-backs pick. And then I think Jackson Humphreys was another coming out of high school. Yeah, eighth round pick, $600,000 to the Guardians. Joshua Hartle, do we get credit for him? Can we count him? He went to campus, but he was a top 50 sort of prospect coming out of high school. And then I think we should also be able to claim Jackson Ferris because he came out of North Carolina before he transferred to IMG Academy. So he was lured away by the academy system, and I guess we can't officially claim him. But as a North Carolina product myself, I'm going to try and at least get partial credit for him.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Like, and you expand that out of the state of North Carolina, like more recently with prep lefties, the one guy that comes to mind a little bit is Frank Mazzucato, who went really good in 2021. Mm. I think he went seventh overall to Kansas City. And they're different pitchers, him and Briggs McKenzie, obviously, but kind of comparing the two and where Frank went, it wouldn't at all shock me just given what he looks like on the mound now. And then also, you know, you continue assume that he continues to perform. Mm. I mean, it would not shock me at all if he's there in the first. Like I said, I'd be like beyond over the moon excited if he's there with my second pick, but I don't know if that's going to be the case. Like, kind of comparing apples to oranges a little bit just in the profile in the arsenal, but like I'd probably prefer him to Matt Scott at this point.
Yeah,
and it seems like those are two guys that are going a little bit in the opposite direction. McKenzie way more up than like Scott is down. Scott's just kind of trickling where it's like Briggs is shooting, but
yeah,
he's a really, really impressive arm.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Definitely. And he's not the only left-hander we're going to talk about on today's show. The college ranks in terms of left-handed pitching is pretty impressive this year. Two guys who have received a lot of up arrow buzz. This is the case when you're a Friday night SEC left-handed pitcher with solid or better stuff and you're performing. Both Cade Anderson, left-handed pitcher at LSU, and Zach Root, left-handed pitcher at Arkansas, transferred from ECU, have been getting lots of positive buzz. I think both these guys could also find homes in the first round. I'm not sure if either or both of them are like slam dunk definite first round types now, but both are trending in that direction. And again, if you talk to like individual scouts, I could certainly see individuals having them as no doubt first round picks, but in terms of consensus in the industry, at least top 50 ish for both these guys, really probably all four of these guys that we're talking about, top 50 seems like a reasonable conservative estimate if we're not doing any sort of high school overpay shenanigans. But yeah, which of these do you want to talk about first, Peter? Because again, both Friday night lefties who are doing it.
Yeah, I guess we'll save the best for last. And we can touch on Zach Root first, but I know these are two guys that you've dove into pretty deep. Root's kind of been a guy since he was a freshman at ECU. When he was a freshman at ECU, it was more flashes than it was performance. Took a step forward last spring and established himself as kind of the ace of that staff outside of Trey Savage. And then this spring, obviously, making serious noise at Arkansas as one of their main guys. But it's kind of been a similar story with Root. For a while, the stuff's ticked up just kind of as he's progressed career wise, but low 90s fastball, up to 96. He doesn't get a ton of swing and miss with it. So, I mean, I think that pitch you can kind of tinker with a little bit. It does get hit around, at times. I think it needs some refining going forward, but the book on him has always been, you know, the secondaries, are the calling card, especially his changeup and feel for spin. Like, his curveball is kind of this big two planer, 11 to 5 shape with teeth to it. And then the changeups also, I mean, I think you can stick 55s, on both the curveball and the changeup.
Yeah, the changeup. The changeup got top three in our preseason scouting director best tools in the class. The changeup was there. I mean, it's a high usage pitch that he's used a lot. Gets a lot of swing and miss. Seems to have a lot of confidence in. And what jumped out to me when I was just pulling up his 2024 numbers and comparing them to 2025 is you mentioned the fastball getting hit around a lot. Well, he significantly dialed back the usage, and compared to most pitchers in this top range, at least, like, he was already at a fairly light fastball usage. It was a 47% usage rate in 2024. He has dropped that down to 33% this spring so far through his first five starts. That's Rhett Lauder range in terms of fastball usage. He's really going to these secondaries a lot, whether that's curveball, slider, cutter, changeup. Like, he's throwing a lot of secondaries. He's throwing them for strikes. He's getting miss on those pitches. So just a really deep arsenal. I'm not sure how much lower you can go on actual fastball usage, but that tweak alone seems to have allowed him to strike out more batters, get hit around less frequently, and have success.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, the fastball doesn't get a ton of whiff. It'll flash some arm side life, but I'm with you. The changeup is certainly, you know, I was light initially in saying 55. It's no doubt plus, just looking back at what I wrote about him and then also going back and looking at video. But legit fade to the arm side, late dive, and then there's feel the spin in there. So, I mean, it's kind of like ugly in how it looks. Like,
yeah, I was about to ask you about what you think about the delivery. He has this little rock back, kind of tilts in his leg kick, and then he comes through and fires from this lower arm slot at times. I don't know if it's like three-quarter or low three-quarter or between those two. But it is a bit unusual.
Yeah, I mean, he'll drop the slot at times, but it's not this super like buttery, aesthetically pleasing look you sometimes see from left-handers. But I mean, like we talked about with Liam Doyle, obviously they're completely different pitchers, other than the fact that they're both left-handed. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you don't necessarily have to ignore the how it looks, but I mean, if it works, it works, and it works for Root. It adds some funk and deception to his entire operation. He's a lefty with four pitches for strikes, and just in watching him throw, I mean, he competes his butt off.
Yeah, and he's also been a pretty solid strike thrower throughout his career. His 11% walk rate as a freshman with ECU in 53 innings. And also, it kind of stands out that he's always been a pretty heavy starter. I mean, he had a few appearances out of the bullpen in 2023. As a freshman, but other than that, it's been all starter 2024, all starter so far this year. His career walk rate is 8.9%. Last two seasons, it's been between 7% and 8%. So those are pretty good numbers, especially when it feels like the last few years we've had a lot of erratic question mark command guys.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, he's consistently around the strike zone. Competitive pitch percentage is really high, so. Really outside of the fastball for me, there aren't a whole lot of obvious warts. It wouldn't shock me, like left-handed SEC performance starter, like that profile. Again, it doesn't really last super long. First round for me would be a little rich for Root. Like, if he keeps doing it and keeps performing, as he is right now. I know he threw the ball really well at Globe Life when a ton of people were there, in front of a lot of heat. So, that's probably reasonably fresh in people's minds, but he'll kind of have to keep pitching his way into the first round. But again, a guy that I'd be more than happy with to select with my second pick, because you've got a 55 curveball, comfortably plus change, strike throwing lefty. Again, you kind of talk about the boxes this guy checks and the buckets he might fall into, and there are a number of them.
Yeah, well, you said we're saving the best for last. I was kind of curious the degree of separation you had personally between Cade Anderson and Zach Root. Sounds like you are in Cade's camp. We're going to have them in a reasonably similar spot on the board, but another Friday night starter for LSU has performed in terms of like the stat sheet numbers. Cade Anderson has been more impressive than Root so far this year. Five starts, 2.57 ERA, 28 innings, 48 strikeouts, 8 walks. That translates to a 43.6% K rate, 7.3% walk rate for the draft eligible sophomore. What you got on Cade Anderson, Peter?
Love him. I liked him a lot last year as a freshman as well. he's only taken a massive step forward as a sophomore, draft eligible sophomore at that. But three pitch guy, like legit three pitch guy, the kind of cut slider hybrid that he's mixing in has been a real revelation for him in a development since last spring. Last spring, he was primarily fastball curveball, which is a two pitch combo that worked for him. But it's been really encouraging not only to see him add like a legitimate third pitch. He threw a handful of changeups, but to add a legitimate third pitch that he's comfortable using and has proven effectiveness, I think is a really positive development. Yeah. Flash.
It feels late. Like. Sorry to cut you off. It feels like adding that slider gives him just another secondary that he can throw for strikes, because as we're talking about with Root's changeup, scouting directors viewed Cade Anderson's curveball as one of the better breaking balls in the college class. And it's just interesting to see him not only drop the usage of the fastball, but also drop the usage of a pitch in his curveball that was viewed as highly as that, and have more success. He's throwing the fastball just under half the time. The slider he's throwing about a third of the time. The curveball is only a 10% usage pitch right now, according to Synergy, for a pitch that a lot of people view it as a plus high spin offering. So it's just a bit odd, I guess, to see him dialing back that pitch so much and still having this success. The walk rates are down early. The strikeout rates are up. And it's probably worth mentioning that, like, for both Root and for both Anderson, they've had just a single week against SEC competition. So I would assume these numbers are going to start to maybe decompress a little bit. But, I mean, it's been impressive.
Yeah, and I'd say with Anderson, like, there's also field of pitch there and ability to manipulate shape, especially when I was kind of honing in on the slider. Like, this curveball's always been this big, almost true 12-6er with a ton of depth, a ton of teeth to it, long been viewed by myself and then obviously really everyone as this plus breaking ball. But the slider has just been outstanding. And circling back to that initial point of being able to, you know, the field of pitch and the ability to manipulate its shape, like in just his recent start against Missouri, like against lefties, it was kind of this shorter, like cutter-like pitch where it had this late glove side life and lateral life. But against righties, he can two plane it and back foot it for whiffs with kind of this late with late depth to it. I mean, I'd have to dig in more on it and really hone in, but it's a no doubt 55 in my book. So I mean, now you're talking about a 60 and a 55, and they're absolutely distinct in shape. So you're talking about two different breaking balls. And then the fastball with him, I think, is also really fascinating. And it's another pitch for which his feel has ticked up from a velocity standpoint. Mm-hmm. It's not going to knock you over and knock you off your chair, but in watching him and how he does it and the ability to maximize its effectiveness and the traits is really impressive. And I think it goes back to the point of his pitchability ticking up and his ability as a pitcher improving since last spring. Like, it sits in the low 90s, but it's been up to 96. He consistently locates it in the top half of the zone, which is where it's at its best, just given its riding life, high spin. It's got a 44% whiff rate this year with a 28% chase rate. And then in zone, it's got a, I believe, 39% miss rate, which is all are really, really impressive marks. So, I mean, for me, now you're sitting here talking about a left-handed starter in the SEC with above average strike throwing ability. He's got at least 255s with the fastball and the slider and a plus breaking ball. And then a changeup that's a fine fourth pitch that's even flashed a little bit. But you're talking about the fastball, slider, and the curveball. And a guy that figures to keep performing in the SEC. Like, I'm going to take that in the first round.
Yeah, so right now, if you just look at strikeout rate minus walk rate, Cade Anderson is ninth in the country of Division I arms behind guys like Liam Doyle, Logan Lunsford, Wes Mendez at Florida State, Patrick Forbes at Louisville, Trey Beard at Florida Atlantic, Jamie Arnold at FSU, Kyson Witherspoon, Oklahoma, Colton Book at St. Joseph's, and then you get Cade Anderson at LSU. 36.4% strikeout minus walk rate, sub one whip. I mean, the numbers are all really good. The stuff is really good, as you just broke down. And Yeah, teams love their college performers. They especially love their college left-handers. Just kind of scanning down our board, looking at the left-handed pitching capital. We've got Jamie Arnold, Chris Schoolcraft, Liam Doyle, Cameron Appenzeller, Briggs McKenzie, who we touched on today's show, Kate Anderson, Zach Root, Joseph Jirwa, Landon Beidelschies, Jared Spencer, JD Thompson, Jack Bauer on the high school side is moving up. I mean, there are more other there are other left-handed pitchers I haven't even mentioned that aren't too far off this range, but there's a lot of lefties in Southpaw, or a lot of Southpaws to like in this class.
Yeah, I think there are a number of lefties that you can hitch your wagon to. And then, as we've been talking about now for, I think, a while, not to pat ourselves on the back, but we had kind of pegged the pitching depth as one of this class's strong suits just heading into the cycle and initially coming out of the summer. So I'm happy to see that hold true and even, I'd say, gain even more validity. But the last point I want to make on Anderson, and not to wear anyone out talking about him, but I think that a really nice cherry on top with him, and you talk about so often with like the how guys do it, it's a really simple, repeatable operation with him, low maintenance. And then I think that there's some physical projection remaining with him as well to kind of fill out, you know, at 5-10 plus pounds to his frame. And with that, everything should continue to tick up. Maybe adds 1, 2, or 3 ticks to the fastball, which doesn't sound like a lot on the surface. But if you go from sitting 1-4 or 2-4, and now you're sitting 3-5, 3-6, bumping 7 and 8, I mean, that's a pretty sizable jump, at least, you know, when talking about a fastball like Anderson's, especially from the left side. So for me, he's a first rounder. I'll be excited to see how he continues to pitch. I know this weekend he's got a really big start in Texas. There'll be a ton of heat there, obviously, and there'll be a ton of heat there.
Is that a top 5 matchup for us this week?
Yeah, top 5.
Nice.
Number two LSU versus number 5 Texas. So that'll be a fun one.
Yeah, we've had some loaded. I guess this is the case every year in the SEC, but some loaded matchups the last 2 weeks. That's what happens when you're playing in the SEC.
Exactly. Yeah, cool. Tennessee's reward for sweeping Florida last week is a road series at number 10, Alabama.
Yeah, it does not get easy in that conference, but it's great for us. We get to see a lot of good players and good teams face off against each other, and that's what we want to see. At risk of being the Debbie Downer here, I think we're going to probably wrap it up on today's episode just to try and get back to some BA 300 work on my end. I'm sure you got plenty of stuff that's going on, Peter, but apologies to those who like really extended, drawn out draft pause. I know sometimes we go a little longer than 30 minutes, but just 30 minutes today, just highlighting a few of the notable up arrow players to be on the lookout for on our next update. But before we get out of here entirely, Peter, anything you want to mention or close with or plug to the listeners?
No, nothing out of the ordinary, just the usual slew of content going on over at baseballamerica.com. So no matter what level you're kind of a fan of, I can guarantee you there'll be something that you like over there. So encourage you to check it out and subscribe, because it allows us to do what we do, and we couldn't be more thankful for that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you guys a lot. So hope y'all have a great weekend. For Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next time. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.